Meeting first order of business is roll call. Jim Patrick, here. Bill Brannigan?
Here.
Lee Hardy?
Here.
Bob Berman?
Here.
Jim Hasselman?
Here.
Gary East?
Here.
Braulio Escobar?
Here.
Justin Capri?
Here.
And Greg Sutton?
Here.
All right. First up is new business. 2A, outline of housekeeping amendments addressing 2021 legislation. Derek.
Thank you, Derek Tokos, Community Development. We have a number of bills that came out of the 2021 legislative session that modified state law in a manner which we need to make changes to our development code to be in sync with that. And that's what's outlined in here, probably more so than housekeeping. Although if there are some housekeeping, you know, cross connections in the code we need to pick up, I'll try to spend a little bit of time on that between now and when you actually see a set of code revisions. But this memo largely focuses on changes to state law in 2021, plus one bill, actually a couple of bills that are going to kick out of the 2022 short session here in the next week or so. We might as well pick those up as well. A number of these bills are in effect, which means that, you know, we have to apply those state laws directly if they're not in our code. So the reason we want them in our code is that we don't miss that kind of thing when we're working with folks. A fair amount of it has to do with affordable housing, and there is a fair amount of funding moving through the pipeline for affordable housing. So I wouldn't be shocked if we have projects that are on point here in the next few years. I'm going to go ahead and do a shared screen. I'm just going to bring up the memo I included in your packet. I'm not going to do a deep dive on the bills, but I'm happy to answer questions as we go along. But I was going to just kind of walk through the memo and the summary of some of the changes and where we'd be making those changes. Hang on one moment. Okay. So I trust that you can see the language here. Everybody see the memo?
Yes.
Okay. There are a couple of bills. House Bill 2008, you know, gets at affordable housing, and it expands where it's permissible. And so what, you know, we need to do is you know, we're going to need to go in and amend the definition section of our code so that we have a definition that aligns with what's in the bill that defines what affordable is. So affordable housing is defined in the legislation and in statute is affordable households at or below 60% median family income. We will need to adjust some language in the intent of our zoning districts to clarify that, you know, what zone for residential, commercial, or industrial use means, because that term is used in this bill and others. And we have a number of mixed use zones. So I think it's probably prudent for us to have some language in there that says basically when you're talking about zone for residential use, you're talking about a residential zone, R1, R2, R3, R4, not a C2 down in Nye Beach, which is a mixed use zone. Or a water-related zone, which also allows residential on upper floors, or any of our other commercial zones, which allows residential on other than street grade. If I have a need to revise section 1403070, which gets at commercial and industrial uses, to note that affordable housing on property owned by a nonprofit corporation organized as a religious corporation is permitted outright on commercial land that's adjacent to a residentially zoned parcel or lot. We'll have some cross references to clean up there. Yeah, Jim.
Question, Derek.
So I had Derek. Jim Hanselman, then you, Bob.
Yeah, I'm trying to unmute. I'm a little concerned about that. And of course, it is. I'm not a lawyer, but this seems to be specifically worded and written for religious entities. This section does not allow for secular nonprofits. And I really wonder if David Allen thinks that this is correct with our First Amendment of our Constitution. It says no law will be written to honor religious orthodoxy or routine or what have you. So I don't know why they are. There's lots of nonprofit corporations that aren't religious, and I don't know why they're being shut out by this. That seems a little backwards if we're trying to get affordable housing built. I think it should be any nonprofit organization, not simply religious. I think that butts up against the First Amendment, but David Allen would be a better source of discussion on that. But I needed to say that. Thank you.
Well, that's fair. This is the focus of this particular legislation. Senate Bill 8, which we're going to touch on in a bit, expands that to other types of nonprofits, Jim. So
okay.
The two have kind of an interrelationship that we're going to need to pick up in our code amendments.
Well, I think we're benefited by all nonprofits having access to this kind of building. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I cut out some players.
And Bob, you had something you want to share?
Exactly the same thing.
Okay.
I can't see any logical reason why it would be limited to religious organizations.
At the end of the day, it won't be. We'll hit some of that as we go further down the memo. Probably want to touch on our water dependent and water related use categories to clarify that one or both are property zoned for industrial use. This is one where you have a little bit of discretion. My sense is that I think that we absolutely want to make it clear that our water dependent properties are classified as industrial and therefore cannot be co-opted for affordable housing. Affordable housing is very important, but we have a very little, a finite supply of water dependent, property. The water related one, I mean, we already allow commercial and residential there. I mean, so I think, you wouldn't necessarily need to go down that route for that. But just curious what your thoughts are on that particular item, as that's one where you have some discretion.
I think I'd rather leave it tied up as industrial. I mean, we already make some concessions anyway, mm-hmm. but it's not a good choice for an affordable housing project to be put on water-related and or water-dependent.
I know you're talking about property right there on the bayfront there.
Yeah.
Or over on Hatfield and where all that is. So is there a general agreement I should just write that up as water-dependent and water-related or classified as industrial, the property zoned it for industrial use?
I think you should, yes.
I don't think we'll get pushback from the state on this because they recognize that those shoreline, the water-related and dependent areas are pretty important in of themselves. Then we'll need to do some changes to 1415, residential uses in non-residential zoning districts to indicate that affordable housing is permitted at street grade subject to the clear and objective development standards that apply to adjacent residentially zoned property. So if it's a C1 zone that butts up to R2 zoning and you have somebody who gets a hold of that and wants to do an affordable housing project on that C1 zone at street grade, they would be subject to the R2 standards because they are adjacent to an R2 zone. If it's R4, it'd be R4. That's kind of how that would work. As I mentioned, Senate Bill 8 has some crossover. Some of their definitions are a little bit different. You have affordable housing in the context of that bill is 80% of median family income as opposed to 60. And it expands the locations where affordable housing must be allowed to include land owned by a public body, including publicly owned industrial sites and property zoned for public use. So you have a little bit expanded scope here. And that's why I say when I do the work, I'll try to keep an eye on making sure it syncs up with the bill we just talked about, House Bill 2008. we would be revising our code to note that affordable housing on property owned by a public body is permitted on light and medium industrial zone property, adjacent land zone for residential use. I don't see that really coming into play too much with us, but it's in the bill.
Derek?
Yeah.
Let me see. How are we going to deal with the 80% or 60%? Because the two House bills, the one Senate bill and the one House bill differ in what that percentage is to determine affordability. We can't have both those figures in our ordinance.
Yeah, my thought on that, actually, it's a good question, Jim, was to go with the 60% because it's more common and then use the 80% as a threshold that would trigger for some of these provisions we're just talking about in Senate Bill 8. So it becomes a development standard at that point.
Okay, thank you.
It does allow for, we're going to need to allow affordable housing on public zone property adjacent to land zone for residential use, and we do have a fair amount of public zone property in residential areas, although the city has, council has not looked to use those properties for affordable housing, and most of them are dedicated to other uses at this point.
Just to clarify, Derek, that would be a public effort. We're
correct.
Not talking about a developer coming in and buying
yep.
land. Okay.
Yep. All right. This is just a public effort. And, you know, the council's has periodically thought about, is there anything we can do in terms of shuffling the deck with the city's property inventory to help? And we have made property available for affordable housing. We just don't have a lot of it that's suitable for that. That would be the duplex next to City Hall that Habitat built, is a affordable housing that was city-owned property. One thing we can do that both this bill and I think 2008 also have language in there that says we can prohibit affordable housing on non-residential properties in hazard areas. And the tsunami hazard area is such a critter. So my question to you is, would you want to prohibit affordable housing in a hazard area like a tsunami hazard area?
Yes.
Of course.
My thought is no. If we don't prohibit residential housing, I don't see how affordable residential housing has any significant different characteristics to justify it.
Let me reframe that, Bob, because I wasn't as clear as I should have been. The city can prohibit affordable housing on non-residential properties in hazard areas. We don't generally allow, you know, housing in these areas that we're talking about already.
Okay.
This bill allowed it to extend onto industrial property, for example. We got a boatload of that in South Beach.
Eric, what is the definition of hazard area? Obviously, a tsunami thing, but I mean,
in the context of the state legislation, it's anything we have under what we call a Goal 7 hazard. So that would be floodplains. Could be geologic hazards. Would be geologic if you know, and then tsunami would be another one. Those would be the three typically that we would be dealing with in terms of hazards.
How about wildfire?
Could, but we don't really have an inventory that would allow for us to designate wildfire risk at a zoning regulatory point. We're not quite where Bend's at, for example, some of the other areas that are at much higher risk. It could be, but we'd have to have a inventory in our comp plan that showed that it was significant enough risk that we are then imposing limitations on residential development. We don't have that right now. We do, in the context of the tsunami hazard overlay, and we also have that with geologic, although we have a lot of residential and geologic hazards areas. I think we'd have a tougher argument there. So you think it'd be reasonable for, I'll go ahead and put some language together then, that that would limit the scope of this on non-residential properties in a tsunami hazard area.
Yeah, that'd be helpful.
Okay. House Bill 2583, I had mentioned this, it prohibits local governments from imposing occupancy limits based on familial or non-familial relationships. This has no impact on our short-term rental regulations. We worked with the powers to be at the time as that legislation was being developed, and that they made sure it didn't impact short-term rentals. But it does get into a number of our definitions we need to clean up. We need to delete a definition for family and then clarify a number of definitions that use the word family in it. So just coming up with alternative definitions there. It doesn't really impact our development regulations in a meaningful way, just a number of the definitions. House Bill 3261, we have to allow hotels and motels to be converted for affordable housing or emergency shelter use. Again, we can hem that in tsunami hazard zones. So if one of the three hotels down in South Beach, for example, which are all in a, I believe all three of them are in a tsunami hazard overlay, we could write it such that they wouldn't be permitted to be converted because they're in a tsunami risk area. House Bill 2560 requires us to allow people, and we have to figure out how we're going to make this work, to submit testimony electronically, even during a hearing. So I'll take a look through our procedural requirements and see if we need to make any adjustments there. House Bill 3109 requires local governments to allow child care centers in all commercial and industrial zones, except our heavy industrial zoned areas. So we'll need to do some work on definitions. And I assume we're not going to want, we have to do a little bit of syncing with the tsunami hazard overlay restrictions, which limit child care centers in a risk area. So we'll need to make some changes there too. House Bill 2607, we can't require the construction excise tax for residential housing that's being constructed to replace a house that's been destroyed or damaged by natural disaster. So we'll just add that to the exemption so it's in our code. The House Bill 2809 requires local governments allow RV on a lot or parcel where the dwelling's been destroyed or damaged by natural disaster. So they just can go on there and set up. We can't require some sort of land use review for that. It needs to be an outright allowance. We currently allow people to put an RV on a property while they're building their home if they get a temporary use permit from us. I wonder whether or not we ought to just make it an outright allowance and scrap the temporary use permit. We haven't had a lot of interest in this, by the way, this particular provision.
Are there any term limits on this? I mean, how long could an RV sit on that on that site?
It is in the bill. There are limits. I think the outlier was like 24 months max or something like that. So they'd have a couple of years to get it all done, which, you know, seems like a long time, but it's not as long when you're dealing with federal agencies and relief and, you know, just trying to get your, you know, life back in order to be able to replace your home. That 2 years goes fast.
Yeah, I don't find 24 months unusually long. I just don't want it open-ended.
Yep.
Derek, I assume somewhere there's a nice tight definition of natural disaster.
We'll take a look at that, Bob. I think generally it ties back to a disaster declaration, that there has to be some form of declaration, but I'll see what I can do on that.
Yeah. I'm thinking of the landslide on 70th.
Yep.
As an example, was that a natural disaster or was that just a a landslide. I don't know.
Yeah, I think we would, in that context, it would have been a natural disaster. It was a disaster declaration, a landslide attributed to severe weather event. But you make a good point. Can we put some sidebars onto what that means so it's clear to people what?
Well, if your house burned down and there wasn't a forest fire, is that a disaster? I mean, it's a disaster. You've lost your home. But
right.
Does that
fit? If a developer screws up a development and causes a landslide like they did up on Northeast 70th, that's not a natural disaster.
I see.
Hey, I was waiting for that to come in there, Lee.
Yeah.
Happy to
Derek,
oblige.
Derek, is there anything in the proposed bill about accommodating sanitation or forcing some form of sanitation for RVs that are parked?
I don't recall, other than I think there's some language in there. There may be some language in there that allows them to connect, and presumably they would be connecting to the wastewater system that's available on the property. I'll look into that, Bill.
Yeah, I mean, you know, stuff flows downhill. So.
Right. No, just writing a note down. Okay. SB 405 prohibits local governments from barring the reestablishment of a nonconforming use due to discontinuance if a state or local emergency orders limits or prohibits reestablishment of the use. So that is actually something we need to, we have provisions in our nonconforming use code that say, you know, you're discontinued after 12 months. That wouldn't apply in this case. We need to come up with some language that clarifies that clock stops when there's that kind of a state or local emergency order out there.
Hey, Joe, I guess I'm high centering on it. What are they talking about? I'm not getting this. What's their example of this happening?
I think they did that bill because they didn't want local governments to say you have a bunch of nonconforming houses, say in a particular area, they get burned down and they don't get reestablished within a specific period of time. They didn't want them being discontinued. So what they wanted to do is say, hey, look, if there's a state or local emergency order out there that's going to require, it takes longer for them to get their use reestablished, you have to respect that. You can't just discontinue them because they didn't rebuild in 12 months.
Okay.
I believe that's what it's getting after.
Okay. This has to do with the wildfire stuff then. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, it's all more right. Of the same.
Makes sense now, but I kept reading that. Couldn't figure out what they're trying to get at. But
so basically what I'll be putting language in there that says that in the event that there's a natural disaster, that 12-month discontinuance provision is going to get superseded by what's in that order. I'll come up with some verbiage on that, but that's what it's getting at. And then 4064A, which we now actually, I just saw B in gross version was posted. This one's coming out of this session, and it's one we probably want to pick up since it's going to, you know, be effective pretty quickly here. It gets at basically building in prefabricated structures. You know, we need a definition for one. We don't have that right now. We have manufactured dwellings, but, you know, we don't have something that covers prefabricated structures, which are also manufactured. They're just not manufactured to HUD standards.
Does this feel like an Adair home?
No, we're talking about basically
the ones they put down on Doug's place. I can't remember what they call them. Park models.
Park models. Down on Third Street.
Park models kind of fits in there, but I think you're talking about this whole new class of kit homes that are being developed nowadays where, you know, you can basically buy them. They get built at the manufacturer and then they get assembled on your property. But they're not HUD to HUD standards like your traditional manufactured dwellings. And so you're seeing more and more manufactured prefabricated structures on the market.
So what standard
Boxable
are they?
They're
not getting built to the building code, not getting built to the HUD standards. What are they getting built to?
Well, see, that's the beauty of it, Jim.
Yeah.
They're being built as standards, different standards all over the place, depending on who's building them. And the way the Oregon Building Codes Division is trying to deal with it is they're creating a registration process where these builders can demonstrate that their products meet Oregon Building Code. If they do, they get to go on the list. If they're on that list, then we can green light them to be placed on a foundation on a lot in Newport. That's how that is working in concept.
But if they're not on the list, prohibit them from being placed on a lot in Newport?
Correct. Because they're not built to the Oregon codes, which they're required to be built to.
And this would include things like 3D printed homes, storage container homes, that type of thing.
Storage container, definitely. After 3D printing, I'll look into that one, Gary. I don't know if that's particular. That's prefab. That's fabricated on site. That's not something that's shipped there in pieces. They put the 3D printer on the property and go for it. I think, however, that mechanism rolls out, we still have the challenge of they have to be built to a specific safety code. And in Oregon, that still is the Oregon Residential Specialty Code. And so that's the rub. And like I said, the state's has put together a registration process for these companies, and it's slow going. Another piece of this, though, gets rid of the statutory manufactured dwelling standards that can be applied when you're putting a manufactured dwelling on a lot outside of a park. You may recall we have those in our code. They mirror what's in the statute, which is, you know, you have to have, if you're doing a manufactured dwelling, well, there are a number of pieces to it. You know, you have to have the hitch removed, you have to have it skirted. But then there's some stuff in there like you have to use exterior materials that are comparable to what's in the neighborhood, which is not clear and objective. They're nuking all of that stuff out of the statute, and which then means because of the needed housing statute, which requires we apply clear and objective standards, we need to go in there and peel out anything that's not clear and objective. So what I was going to do is I was going to go ahead and propose revisions, delete out those that I, and show them in strike through for you. Delete out those I think that aren't clear and objective, and you can take a look at it and say, yeah, we agree or we don't agree with that change.
Derek, do commercial buildings have to adhere to the HUD standards too, or can they be different?
HUD standards generally are for residential manufactured dwellings.
Okay.
So that's going to be the package that, and I've just shown you just with the outline how it ties to the bills, but I'll bring back for your upcoming meeting an actual set of code revisions that pick up the issues we were just discussing. I don't have anything else on that one, Jim.
Okay, then we're off to unfinished business, and first up is the draft 2022-23 city council goals.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and bring those up. So the city council, you see those? So the city council went ahead and put their goals, and they're going to consider them for adoption on the 7th, coming up here pretty quickly. City managers asked department heads if we have any feedback, and we need to give them feedback by March 1st. I thought I'd, you know, run this by you as a committee that you work very closely with the council. If you have any thoughts on their goals, I'm happy to incorporate your feedback with, or at least include your feedback with any comments I'm providing on behalf of community development. So I just thought I'd run through those that are
How do you want to do that, Derek? Just scroll down and somebody will yell stop when you get to the page or what?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking about doing, Bob. We just kind of scroll through them and, you know, if you have issues as I'm going through, stop and we can talk about it. A number of the goals relate to what we do, but a number of them don't. So, but enhancing a livable region, all this, as you know, it ties back to the vision strategies and the codes here, like A1 or vision strategy A1 or A10 relates to the brochure, which I did include in your packet, which actually lists out what the full strategy is. I'm going to skip a water distribution and storage system is not something we in community development take a lead on. It certainly is a priority. We have a number of things we're pursuing there to secure the city's water supply. The council would like to see a more concerted effort on improving maintenance of the city's street system and shoring up funding for that purpose.
Hear, hear.
They want to get this transportation system plan wrapped up and so that we can start to kind of focus our planning energies more on the city center revitalization piece of it. That's not to say that, you know, once the transportation system plan is done, it's done. That means we start implementing projects in there. But they would like to get the planning piece of that done so that we can spend a little bit more of our energies on the next step, which is really kind of focusing in on the city center area. Strong desire to increase supply of affordable and workforce housing, including rentals in the community. We're doing that housing study, which we'll be kicking off. I'm talking a little bit more to you about that, which will be one place where the Planning Commission is going to have a role in that, in addition to on the land use regulatory side. We have a relatively modest role in the overall scheme of things, though. On housing. We don't control how fast housing prices go up, cost of land, labor, materials for constructing projects. We don't have any control there. So we'll see how that goes. Completing pedestrian safety amenities throughout the community. We have a number of projects that have been budgeted. They're listed here that the council would like to see followed through on. You know, some of that's, you know, like an additional what we call enhanced pedestrian crossings on 101 and US 20 are fit in there.
We need one at 101 and 73rd before I get killed.
Saw an email from Bob to that effect today.
The news of your death was premature. Yeah. Derek, I, you know, the transportation system plan obviously is getting close to being done.
It's getting there.
But I did notice that basically on this set of goals, A5 has some very specific things in it. A6 and A8 are not included in the TSP at all. And they're both significantly transportation related. I'm wondering if at least A6 and A8 could be added to the project lists because they're not there. There is some language on 58, but it doesn't have to do with the right turn lane and the actual intersection. It has to do with realignment and pedestrian crossing.
We don't have the trolley in there, but we do have it already. You know, and it's referenced here under A6A. We have it in the parking study and report that was presented to the council because the county actually put a number to it. It wasn't called a trolley. It was called a rapid transit run between Nye Beach Bayfront and City Hall. I mean, the trolley piece is just more the...
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I did see that.
Cosmetic of it.
Yeah.
So we do have that.
Yeah, well, you know, on the A5, you know, they list a bunch of things. I didn't go through them to see whether they were all in the TSP, but it really should be synced up if it's a a city council goal, then it certainly needs to be reflected in the in the TSP.
These projects up here, the A5s, those are those are in there. I know they're in there. I've looked at those.
Okay.
So, but it's a good point.
All right, and A8 is different than what is in there, so probably either should be added or one of the ones that are in there should be modified to talk about this turn into the movie theater.
Yeah.
And
I'll take a look at that. I know there's a project there, but you're right. I don't think those are exactly the same. The tricky thing is, though, too, you know how it is with a council goal for something on the state highway is something we can strive for and push the state on, but we don't control that highway. So they may or may not be amenable to that change. And I don't know that that's been vetted with them at this point either.
Right. Right.
Hey, back on the safety stuff, and I can't remember now. Did we have something in there to put in the city put in a safety crosswalk over by the movie theater for all those new apartments? Because there's a bus stop on the west side and a bus stop on the east side. But to try to get to the west side, you just got to make a mad dash across the 101.
Yeah, that there is in there the is TSP. A project. Yeah.
There's a project in there. That's actually so. I actually have a capital project sheet for the proposed budget that would fund that one.
Okay.
So it would be going into the funded, capital project list for us to start working a design with the state on. Acquiring property in the Big Creek Reservoir. We're trying to get a watershed, basically a plan for managing the watershed prepared. Been having some challenges with funding. We may have to fund that one without grant funds. We were successful in getting OWEB, the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, to find our projects worth funding, but they don't seem to have enough money to fund all of their worthy projects, and we've not received any funding at this point. So investing in our sanitary sewer collection system. We have a sewer master plan that's for the wastewater treatment plant. That's the B3 here.
Yeah, going back to the watershed, were you looking for funding to buy the properties or to condemn the properties?
I think the first step is actually do a plan on how we need to be managing our watershed and what sites should be a priority for acquisition. Get that piece done. And then once we know which ones we should be acquiring, then cobble together the funding for that. So it's kind of a two steps there.
Is there a ballpark plan on how much acreage we're talking about or how many individual properties?
Well, there are a number of properties in the watershed, but, it's not all are equal. Some are higher quality. Some actually, have, tributary connections of Blattner Creek on them. Whereas others may be on the periphery of the watershed, maybe not as valuable. However, some of those have been recently harvested, so maybe they're cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so you have that whole thing in interplay. But then there's another side of it, too, which is if we acquire it, what are we acquiring it for? Just holding it? Or are we going to let folks like the Community Forest Association do sustainable harvesting or forest management on any of that stuff? What's made available for recreational purposes as opposed to what we want to preserve in the watershed, as no touch? I mean, that's the kind of decisions that need to be made. And a plan for managing the watershed will give us a better sense of, okay, here's where recreation is appropriate. Here's maybe where it's not. Here are the properties we ought to be acquiring, and this is why. And that kind of planning process would also give us a chance to develop and build our relationships with the people that own property in the watershed. They're not all commercial timber operators. There's some private individuals that own property out there too. What are their long-term plans? Are those properties that the city may want to acquire? That kind of thing.
Okay. Well, we could maybe protect it from pesticides.
Yep, that's part of it too. That's a good point. Preserving the environment has a series of here about our wastewater treatment plant. As I mentioned, the wastewater treatment plant master plan, which is partner with the collection system master plan that was done, and you guys approved amendments to the comp plan on that in 2020. I have warned our public works department to, as this plan is developed, to have a very clear sense of how they're going to be proposing to address solids moving forward. I know that was a point of discussion when you guys were looking at the collection system, and that was punted down the road because you weren't looking at the wastewater treatment plant at that time. So hopefully they'll have some good information for you. So when it does actually land in your lap, you're going to have a good sense of how that's going to be handled and can provide, you know, your feedback based on some sort of clear plan.
Derek?
Yep.
Slightly off topic, but did Rogue ever get their act together and start sending decent sewage to the plant?
Yeah, that has progressed. They have their, it's my understanding that their pretreatment system is operable at this point. So, I will not take a position about how responsible they are or not being at this point in terms of how well their pretreatment's working and what kind of effluent discharges we're getting. I just don't have that information. That's something our public works department would have.
Okay.
It's an excellent point that you raise, though, because, and it's not just real, there's a few other players out there as well that really have a pretty major impact on the solids issue and the ability for that system to function correctly. So we have to, as they work through that wastewater treatment plant, it's how do we deal with these heavy users as opposed to what contribution are we going to be looking for from existing normal users or from new development, like growth. Because I'll tell you, our capacity at that plant is being utilized at eaten up at a far faster rate than the city's growing. So it's not growth in of itself, adding an apartment building here, single family housing there, that's eaten up the capacity there. It's heavy users and users changing their behavior and discharging more to that system that's really beating it up. So.
Keep us posted on
fish plants and the motels.
Fish plants don't generate a whole lot because their discharge is into the bay, so they don't discharge a lot of their waste product into the city's sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
Restaurants are one we have to keep an eye on, and how effective are their grease traps, and how are they handling their waste. There are some other uses that pop up for here and there in existing industrial space that we need to be careful of. You know, I think we have a operation down in South Beach where it has to do with eels that they're cleaning and, as a product, they discharge, the waste from that into our sewer system. So that's a hit, we had that, remember we, in the past, we had that maraschino cherry operator up by, where NOAA is.
Yes.
So we just have to keep an eye on new uses that repurpose existing spaces at times, because depending on that use, it could have a pretty big hit on our waste stream.
Well, maybe in terms of constructive criticism of the city council goals here, perhaps we should suggest they need to look at the heavy users of the wastewater treatment and those businesses that impact the wastewater treatment more heavily than residential customers. Mm-hmm. I mean, no reason not to direct them into looking at issues that apparently we have.
Is there a general consensus to pass that kind of comment along? I'd be happy to do that if you, if that's what you guys would like generally.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Will do.
Thank you, Derek.
Yep. Okay. They're looking, you know, they want to get, see some traction on the park and rec master plan. They recognize, the council recognizes that funding for park projects is limited. They have allocated about $450,000 of the ARPA funds for trying to get some multi-purpose field built at the Aga Beach Wayside. So that's the one, you know, down there by by the hotel there.
Best Western now, I think.
Thank you.
Old Hilton.
I was just trying to draw a blank. But yeah, right, you know, half of that parking lot's going to, the state park master plan calls for about half that parking lot down there to be yanked out, but they don't have funding for that. We could do that and go in and construct that and put in a multi-use field where basically a bunch of asphalt is right now. But they'd also like to, they'd like to see additional fields elsewhere. Just want to see a little bit of movement on the project side. I'm going to be helping Mike Kavanaugh, our park and rec director, on a local government grant with Oregon Parks and Rec to get some additional funding to redo the Agate Beach Neighborhood Park up there by the dog park. That whole area there, redo that in line with what the master plan envisions. So there'd be like a toddler play area, older child play area, more formal parking put in there, and some enhancements to the dog parks, so on and so forth. So we'll take a run at getting some state money to help with that. Dark Sky, still an interest?
Glad to see you.
Probably not going to go the regulatory route on private development until we get the streetlight piece sorted out, because otherwise it's really hard to engage with people who own private property when the bulk of the problem is coming from the streetlights. And some interest in over the, again, this is the 2 to 5 year time frame on the climate action plan. And principal objectives are more on the education side of that. Then we got promote graywater diversion, home storage of rainwater, and fits in that kind of same bill.
Did they get the state of Oregon to get off of their horse on that one? Because according to them, they own all the rainwater. So.
I don't know that I have any comment on that one, Jim. they would like to see us take a look at the commercial industrial buildable lands inventory. They do recognize that's a longer term thing. We got to get through the housing work, which we're mandated to do short term. But they would like us to take a look at the commercial industrial buildable lands inventory. They do want to move forward with repurposing that piece down at South Beach that the Environmental Agency owns as well. And I do have on your work plan, actually, I got to start working on that RFP. They wanted to take a look at that this spring for making that 2.3 acre piece down at 35th and 101 available for redevelopment. So you'll see that in draft form. Not sure where the solar farm on the airport property came from, or somebody had an idea to do that.
My guess it was Ryan.
Yeah. Interested in seeing sufficient funding to support the public arts and an emphasis on public arts. The Public Arts Committee, I think, is pretty excited about some of the work we'll be doing in South Beach. We have about $1 million reserved for landscaping and public art to kind of wrap things up in the South Beach renewal plan to try to create some gateway features and some visual interest down in South Beach now that a lot of the hard infrastructure work is done. So they'll be actively engaged in that. But they want to see something that's sustainable, and certainly urban renewal is kind of one-time stuff, but they'd like more sustainable funding.
Are they going to do something with that boat down there on the 101? At 101, will you drive up to Wilder?
Maybe after we annex that, but it's not part of the city.
Not part of the city, right? Not at this point, correct. You got the dams. We have a specific, you know, I'm not going to dive into that one too much. You guys kind of know where that stands, but you know, we have sufficient funding for a lot of the design work, access road acquisition, that kind of thing. But we still are in search of the money to actually build the dam that will replace the two existing reservoirs.
Derek, on the next one,
Listos.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just me, but I have no idea what Listos is and how important it is and what it even stands for. So it seems like if you're going to use a term like that, it ought to be defined once. You can use it repeatedly. What is it?
I believe it's emergency outreach training that extends to Spanish speakers, but you know, I don't know the full definition either. So it's a good point.
Thank you.
Okay. Continue work on homeless task force recommendations. Right now, there's a bill with, I think, was it $400 million? And resources, much of which is going to be dedicated to funding for homeless services in some capacity. We are in there as a pilot for about $1 million right now, where it wouldn't be the city of Newport per se. It's actually Lincoln County, Lincoln City, and Newport and Toledo to try to build it's capacity building money. To try to get a homeless service coordinator in place with the county, get an advisory committee formed, to really kind of build an infrastructure to support homeless in this area, right? You know, and we're not the only rural community that's in that pilot. There's 8 total. It's a recognition, I think, by the legislature that some of these resources that they have need to be pushed out. To areas that, you know, don't have the capacity right now to provide as robust a services to the homeless population as, say, a Portland or a Eugene or a Salem can because of the size of those municipalities and the number of nonprofits that are there that can be partners and actually have capacity to be partners. So. Yeah, look for some additional progress on that front because there's going to be some resources driven out to our part of the world, which will be helpful.
Does this mean that we're creating a permanent homeless community rather than considering it as a temporary, a transitory event that's occurring in the community in the state? I mean, if we're talking about, you know, building buildings for partners to discuss strategies and managing homelessness, it sounds like a whole bureaucracy is being constructed on this issue.
You mean as opposed to rehabilitation?
Well, Lee, I sometimes wonder where some of these folks may have made a wrong left turn. And I'm glad that I didn't. But, you know, privately, I don't see a lot of effort to move on from beyond that particular situation.
I agree.
I understand your point, Braulio. I think, you know, I think where this is going though is to try to come up with an actual emergency shelter, actual, you know, coordination with county mental health services, you know, an infrastructure that can actually provide supportive services to those that are homeless. And if you have that, then I think you're actually in a position to begin to address what you're saying, which is how can you, you know, get back on your feet and no longer need these services. But if we have nothing, not even a warming shelter at this point that can be reliably opened, and we're talking pretty baseline there. Because it is a portion of the population. We're actually going to have a count, you know, as we work on our housing study, to be able to frame just, you know, what kind of population do we have that don't have homes, a place to stay? You know, what obligations does the city and the county as partners have to provide services to that population? That's all part of the discussion.
We have less than 5 minutes left on this, but from what I can see of our agenda for the regular session, we don't really have anything other than the final order.
Yeah, I don't have much more to go here, though, either, Jim. Okay. But you're right, all we have is... That's
fair. I think we can run over without a problem, so I just
okay.
Wanted to make it clear.
Okay. Some evaluation of fire service needs for the community. You know, you do have a conversation right now about the consolidation potentially of the city fire department with the rural fire department. That discussion's moving forward. So that kind of fits into that discussion along with how we can maintain and grow the number of volunteers we have. Desire to see the school resource officer back and enhancing coordination among social services, nonprofits, local governments to create a healthier community. So healthier community initiative. And there's a desire to continue to see the Vision 2040 strategies be a foundational kind of document and continue to utilize this in a meaningful way as part of our planning and decision-making process. And a desire to figure out somehow to get younger generations a little bit more engaged in community issues. So maybe a little bit more work with the school district, see if we can get kids at the K-12 level a little bit more interested and engaged in civic issues. That's kind of where that was coming from. Long-term goal. Foster inclusivity, embrace diversity in a broad range of ways, ethnicity, race, age, gender, sexual orientation, self-identity, so on and so forth. And then promote the development of neighborhood associations. We have one now, nine neighbors. But I think there's some council interest in seeing that go up beyond that to other areas. Because it is helpful in many respects if you have an organized group in a particular neighborhood as a conduit of getting information to policymakers. Deal with long-term fiscal sustainability and try to improve accountability and transparency of the expenditures.
Yeah, that one, Derek.
Yep.
The very last line, shouldn't that be 2022? If it was 2021, it'd be done and not be a goal
anymore.
Yeah.
Fixed date and G2. Got it. Revenue connection, what revenue collection is going to, yeah, and improving the health of our funding generally. Continue to upgrade on the tech front, build a strong, healthy working workplace culture. That's something that Spencer's been and the rest of us have, at the department head level, have been spending a little bit of time on of late. Just trying to make sure that we're doing what we can to make sure that this is a that Newport's a wonderful place for somebody to work. We have our challenges, like many smaller communities do, in recruiting people to fill certain positions. You know, we want to be doing everything we can to make this a place where people want to come to work and live.
Does G4 mean that we'll finally get access to the GIS system?
Yeah, I think that's what specific components of it, Jim, as you can see there.
Now, what does that mean?
There are certain, it's interesting. There are certain things that we have, such as alignments of our, say, water or wastewater, you know, our distribution system, you know, that kind of stuff, that we have to be careful about how we put that out there, because people take it as gospel, that it's accurate, and it may not be as accurate as they think it is. So we have to be careful about what we put out, and some things we may not put out because we just don't want people to, you know, think it's something that it's not.
Okay. All right. I get that part of it, but it'd be nice to be able to have access to it.
So I'm not going to dive through the rest of it. I wasn't planning to, which was because everything else in here, other not prioritized, are things that you didn't have a whole lot of council support behind it. There may have been one person who put it up on the wall, but there weren't others who really kind of said, hey, we need to do this.
Just a little copy editing. The very last bullet under B really needs a hyphen between the word no and the litter. Otherwise, you can read it either way. On down under 8 additional ideas.
Okay.
Under B, the very last bullet. You can be read as either never enforce litter laws or. So it needs
got
a hyphen.
Hyphen.
And then under G, I was surprised to see the 6th bullet there. When you get there, G is in George. Count them to 6.
Yeah.
Is that something we asked for?
No. I think it was the council looking to dump their own ones on you guys.
Oh, gee, thanks. I think I used my own. Thank you very much.
That's funny.
To answer Bob's question on LISTO training, LISTO means alert safety in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And the LISTO's training is a grassroots disaster preparedness program that's tailored to meet the individual needs of Spanish-speaking communities.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was. You said it in a much more articulate way.
So it's kind of like a Spanish cert?
Yep.
Okay.
And then on that same page with our computers, Derek, about in the middle, it says install a DEI action plan. Again, I have no idea what DEI is. Probably very important, but it's meaningless to me as it's written.
I think those are treatment of others and recognition of differences. I think that's
sensitivity training, is that what you're...
Yeah, well, we don't call it sensitivity training anymore, Bob.
Why, is that not politically correct?
There you go.
Okay.
But I think that's what it has to do. I'm sorry. Okay. Once again, the acronyms baffle us.
All right. I've got a list of about half a dozen items that came out of this discussion. Is there anything else for the good of the order on this?
Okay, then we're done with that one. And the only other thing was the strategy brochure, but I didn't think you were going to go through that. That was just for edification. And then our updated Planning Commission work program.
Yeah, one thing I had to do on that one is I included an updated work program in there, and I had to push some things down the road with respect to the transportation system plan. Bob's on the advisory committee. He knows that we just had a meeting last Thursday, but the consultants still hadn't prepared the executive summary, and it is an important component of the document. Bob actually raised that issue with the group, and they don't want to make a recommendation yet at the project advisory committee level until they see actually a full complete document. And I'm working with the consultant on a schedule to get them that. So the way that would work is once the project advisory committee makes a recommendation, then it would come before the planning commission, and we would be looking for you to actually initiate the legislative process so that we could get notice to DLCD and begin to work that through an adoption process, public hearings, so on and so forth. So just shuffled a number of things around on the work program, namely related around that, kind of had to push things around to make that work.
Okay. If there's nothing else, then we'll adjourn the work session.
Hi, guys. Have a good night.
All right.
Take care.
Grow that beard out, Dustin.
I'm trying. Derek, you've been
work on it.
Now I know. I'm there. Give me a couple months.